Twim Nation to This Week in Mormons. This is a Taffy edition. I am your host, Tiffany Hales, and I am here with two friends tonight. I am here with John Bernheisel, and I am also here with Laura Wolfred. And so for those of you who are longtime Twin listeners, you will know that I had John on as my guest in December, and I had Laura on as my guest in January. Now, this was actually supposed to be a Twin Sisters episode, but we had some big breaking news this week in the world of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so I invited both John and Laura to come on with me because they're going to have some really good insight when we get down to stories. And Ariane and I will record in 2 weeks. So you will get your Twin Sisters for the month of March. All right. Actually, both John and Laura, why don't you both just say hi to our listeners, and then we'll just do a little host chat and kind of catch up with you and find out what's been going on in your life.
Howdy, y'all.
Hi, Laura. It's nice to meet you. I've heard you speak, and it's nice to see you in person.
Yep, it's nice to meet you, too. It's nice to be back with the Twim Nation, so didn't expect to be back this soon, but I'm totally down with it. So
good. It's an exciting story.
Yeah.
All right. So, John, what's been going on in your life lately? Church or personal?
We had about 3 inches of snow this week here in northern Wyoming. And, of course, that means that track season starts. I'm the track coach.
And, oh.
I help with the distance runners. And so, it'll be a little chilly for the first weeks as normal. You know, we need the snow, and so it's fun to get going. But I'm just busy at school and work and lots of things going on. But my life is about the same as normal.
Good. Laura, how about you? This is what's really interesting. Both you and John are school teachers of teenagers.
I know. It's going to be so much fun.
That's right. Yeah. Laura, tell me what you teach.
I teach choir and drama for middle school and high school.
Oh, and that's awesome.
Are you a history teacher?
No, I wish sometimes. I teach physics and I teach computer science.
Okay.
Yeah.
Totally.
And I'm also the librarian. I'm in a very small school. I have lots of hats I wear.
It's a awesome small school course. You know, we like to wear lots of hats. I don't know, John, if you felt like this was the longest week of ever, because out here we felt that way. I mean, the kids, I love them dearly. They were a little wild over the last week and a half. We had a middle schooler drop a fart bomb outside the office, and it was really smelly and like went all the way down to my room. And so we were disinfecting the air like crazy. So that was an exciting start to yesterday. And the kids have just been wild. We're in musical rehearsal and oh my gosh. I told you guys when I was on in January, we're doing Mamma Mia, and I had to have the rehearsals with my Sam and Donna and my Sophie and Sky in the last week to teach them how to stage kiss. You know, if you want to talk about slightly awkward and hilarious rehearsals, trying to teach teenagers how to stage kiss is...
That sounds like my high school dream, personally, but...
No, it's all good. We had a good time and the kids, you know, were laughing and everything, but there's definitely some very funny moments that are priceless. And I just leave and I'm like, the things that I do for my job, but at the same time, it's been a long week. So I'm glad we're at the weekend.
Well, very good. No, I had a good week. We had state basketball last weekend. Our teams didn't do very well. And so everybody's a little mellow this week, actually, just kind of getting back into school. So
back in the swing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to take a break from this school talk, and I'm going to talk about my Relief Society activity that is this coming Tuesday. We are doing our Relief Society birthday dinner. In fact, let me just grab the invitation. It's just right here. We are doing a waffle bar. And so the invitation is join us for a waffle bar. We will not waffle. We will stand firm in our belief. That's our theme for our birthday dinner.
Can I steal that? I'm on our Relief Sunday Activities Committee. I'm going to remember that. That's one of my callings. So,
okay,
so Laura, well, what would be, before she says, what would be on your dream waffle? What would you put on the perfect waffle?
What would I put on my dream waffle? I love fruit. Like, I would put strawberries and raspberries and blackberries and then some really yummy almond Cool Whip. That is my dream waffle right there. What about you guys?
Well, we have all of those things available at our waffle bar. We are going to have a huge selection of fruit as well as, I always love Nutella. Nutella is my favorite. I'm not a syrup girl, but give me some Nutella on a waffle with a little bit of whipped cream and I'm there for it.
Butter until all the holes fill with melted butter and then syrup and then it's perfect.
I mean, can you really go wrong with a waffle? I mean, I think anything can work with waffles.
Exactly. Well, and that's why we decided to do it, because usually we do, you know, some sort of a dinner that involves more typical dinner food. And I happen to just be searching around on the internet. And I will say, this idea is not a Tiffany original. I actually stole this idea from somebody else. And they had all of the artwork for everything that I needed for this, including games and all sorts of things, available at Etsy for $7.50. And so I was like, for $7.50 on Etsy, I am buying the artwork and I am having my activity done and planned. But I'm excited. I think it'll be really fun. Our sisters are excited because it isn't anything we've ever done before. So it'll be just kind of unique and fun. And we're going to have a party and it's going to be a party vibe. And we're throwing in a little religion with our party. We're going to have about a little 10 to 15 minute talk on this quote by Elder M. Russell Ballard about we will not waffle. So that will be fun for me this week. But snaps. Thank you. We need to move on to stories because we have a lot to discuss tonight. If you are listening to this podcast and you have not heard the big breaking news for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints this week, then you've been living under a rock. That's all I can say. I believe this news broke on Tuesday, if I recall correctly.
One of those.
No, you're right. It was Tuesday.
It was the 5th. Yes, it was Tuesday.
Yes, it was Tuesday. Sorry.
So the big breaking news was, well, you did mention that earlier. The big breaking news, of course, is the acquisition by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints of the Kirtland Temple, along with several properties in Nauvoo and lots of other stuff, which had been previously owned by the Community of Christ, and they had subsequently reached an agreement with the church to sell it to the church. So, John, as our resident historian here, why don't you go into some of the history here and how we got to where we are today and this big breaking news development?
Well, let me start out by saying that I've loved church history all my life, and I really can't think of a, you know, more dramatic moment in church history. I mean, obviously there's the 1978 priesthood revelation and other things, but in my lifetime, I think this is the biggie, you know, the holy grail of Mormon acquisitions. And, so it's massive. So let me give you just a little background for those of you who don't know what the Community of Christ is. So,
okay. You know what, John, before we go into background, let's just talk about where each of us were when we found this out. And then I'll let Laura explain why this is a big deal for her. So, John, how did you hear the breaking news?
So I got a Facebook pop-up. I think I was still at school. And it said something about like, the Kirtland Temple is sold, and I was thinking that like some hotel chain had bought it, or I had no idea who had bought it. And so I clicked on it, and then I thought it was just a fake story. It wasn't an hour or so later till I had enough time to, you know, find the Deseret News article and the Salt Lake Tribune article and to prove that it, but initially I thought it was just sort of fake news. But it sounds like Laura has a much better story than I do.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's a cool story. I was at musical rehearsal. We were rehearsing Voulez-Vous, which is very opposite of what you would, you know, think of with church history stories, I guess. And I looked at my phone to check the time and I had a Facebook notification pop up and it was a member of my bishopric who had posted it in our ward Facebook page. And I have four members in my cast, one of which is playing my Sophie, my main lead. And so I looked at her and I'm like, did you see this? And it's that girl and her twin sister. Last summer, our stake took the youth up to Kirtland for Youth Conference. And they were my adopted children for the week that I was their driver. And so we toured all that stuff together. I was like, Jackie. And she's like, I saw it. I got the text too. And so then everyone at rehearsal stops because the four members and I were just gabbing a mile a minute. And everyone's like, what is going on with the Mormons today? Yeah. In my district, we have a large number for Ohio of members in my school. And so I couldn't even hide my religion if I wanted to. So it's just a known thing. And then we're trying to explain why this is a big deal. And everyone's like, oh, that's really cool. And then we went back to rehearsing. But in the meantime, I'm texting everyone and my Facebook was just blowing up. So it was fun.
Yeah. Well,
that's a great story.
For me, I was in my office and just happily working away on whatever little lawyer thing I happened to be working on. And Kurt Frankum sends me a text message that says, hey, super glad you're recording this week. You and Ariane are going to have a great story or something along that line. And I was like, what is he talking about? And so I thought, well, there must be something that broke. And so that's when I hopped on my computer really quick and I was like, oh, we bought a temple. That's kind of a big deal.
Not just any temple. Exactly. And it's sneaky of him not to tell you.
I know.
Yeah.
All right. So now that we've kind of established where we were and everything, John, now if you'll go back to where you were talking about the community of Christ and the history of how this all came about.
All right. I'll try and give the 60-second version, but I think most of us know that in 1844, after the prophet Joseph Smith was murdered, there was a dispute on who should lead the church. And I think growing up in the Utah version of Mormonism, I was under the impression that, you know, every single person got in a handcart or a wagon and went to Salt Lake. And I tried to get an exact number, but it seems like about 60% of the population of Nauvoo ended up in Salt Lake. Okay. Of the other 40%, probably half of them just sort of disappeared into America. But a smaller percentage coalesced under a few names that I think we all recognize: Sidney Rigdon, the Whitmers, a little bit Martin Harris, a name that maybe we're not so familiar with, James Strang, had a group of followers. And so, and Emma Smith had a group that kind of followed her and the Smith family, Samuel Smith. And so over the next 10 or 15 years, those that didn't go to Salt Lake were kind of scattered around the Midwest, Wisconsin, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana. And as Joseph Smith III, so Joseph Smith's son was 11 when his father was killed. Okay. And I think he was a great kid, good boy. And even at 11, there was some people that were kind of saying, well, you know, maybe he should lead the church and so forth. But no serious talk of that happened until about 1860. And Joseph Smith III felt inspired to become the leader. And they had a conference, and I can't remember what the name of it was. It in Lamoni, Illinois? I can't remember where they had the conference. And so a lot of these sort of scattered groups, if you will, came together. Joseph Smith III gave a
Amboy.
Amboy, there you go. Thank you. Is that in Indiana or Illinois?
Illinois. You're okay. The right state.
So, all these people came together, and it was called the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For about 10 years, they called themselves the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The Salt Lake group called themselves the same thing, and they had a little bit of a dispute. Eventually, they had the reorganized word added to the front, and for the next almost 100 years, for more than 100 years, they were kind of, when I was a kid in the 60s, they were kind of like the bad guys, and I apologize to use those words, but I remember hearing, well, there's another Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and well, they're the ones that rejected Brigham Young. Those are the ones that were too lazy to go to Salt Lake. They're the ones that, you know, and so I heard all these things, and you know, so at one point, what we called them, the RLDS Church, approached 500,000 people is the number that I've heard at their peak. Okay. They had a few schisms, if I'm pronouncing that word right, in the late 1990s. They allowed women to get the priesthood, and that's going to blow people's mind, obviously. And so there was a few groups that broke off of that church, and also since then they have allowed LGBTQ members to be in good standing, to also hold the priesthood. And so in 2001, I believe, they changed their name to the Community of Christ. And it was a little bit of a change of their mission. And slowly over this time, and we'll talk about this more as we talk about the story, they have slowly separated themselves. And I'm sure I'm not using the best terminology, but they've separated themselves from Joseph Smith, from the Book of Mormon, and they don't think the Book of Mormon is as literal a history. They believe it's inspired. And so over the last 20 or 30 years, they have really made the most dramatic differences from the Brighamite, the Utah Mormons, if you will. Yeah. So I hope that sort of gives you some context.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you and I think kind of grew up in the same time frame, and that is how I remember them growing up, was the RLDS Church. And then, like you said, they've switched their name to Community of Christ. They've kind of, you know, evolved and they seem less connected to mainstream Mormonism and what our beliefs are than they were before. But they still held very sacred the origins of the beginning of their church, which we all share a common origin. We share a common origin with them. We, you know, I've read several articles that refer to them as cousins, and that's very true, you know. And then we went our different ways in the late 1840s after Joseph Smith was martyred. And so a lot of these properties and things that were left behind ended up under the control of Emma Smith, is my understanding, and were subsequently, you know, transferred via her descendants and became part of this church. So, all right. So that kind of gives us where we're at today. So, John, tell us, in addition to the Kirtland Temple, what else did the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints acquire?
So I think the Kirtland Temple seems to be the big news story for this. But to me, I think as sort of earth-shattering is all of the Nauvoo properties. Yes. The Nauvoo Mansion House. And I'll tell you a personal connection to that story in just a minute. But the Nauvoo Mansion House, the red brick store, the Joseph Smith, I think it's called the Joseph Smith Home, and about six other blocks of land in Nauvoo. I mean, it's also just a pretty big land purchase, not worth $193 million, but it is a big land purchase. I think it'll be interesting to see what the LDS Church does in the next, you know, 20 or 30 years with that additional land that they have.
for sure.
Roller coasters or, I'm not sure what they'll add, but if I can share a little bit of a personal story here. So my name is John Bernheis. So I'm named after my great-great-grandfather, who was a physician who lived in Joseph Smith's home for, I think, a couple of years before Joseph died. Okay. His name was John Milton Bernheisel. And he delivered a few of Emma's children, Joseph and Emma's children. But also after Joseph's death, it was very important for John Bernheisel went to Utah. He was one of those that got in the wagon. And but he remained friends with Emma. And it was very important that he was in some ways an ambassador from the Utah church with the, you know, what remained in Nauvoo. And so he was a congressman in Washington, D.C. And so every time he was going back and forth, he would stay with Emma. And John Bernheisel remained close to Joe Smith III. And they had a long relationship. And over time, even as Joe Smith III was an adult, my great-grandfather stayed with him also. The Nauvoo Mansion House has a meaning to me because my great-grandfather lived in it, but also, the Bible that Joseph Smith owned was also part of this exchange. And, during the Kirtland and into the Nauvoo periods, Joseph created the inspired version of the Bible, or the Joseph Smith translation, we sometimes call it. And he wrote in his, Joseph Smith wrote in his Bible, his notes about the inspired version, okay? And so at some point in the 1850s, Brigham sent my great-grandfather to stay with Emma and hand copy all of Joseph's notes into John Bernheisel's Bible. And until, you know, Tuesday, we haven't had access to that Bible, the original Bible, other than my great-grandfather's notes, which were terrible, by the way. I have a connection, you know, my family has held some of these documents and stuff, and it's profound. It's really cool to me.
So no big connection at all. Not a big deal.
Yeah. Well, wow. And what's been really interesting in coming out in a lot of the articles is, the condition of the Kirtland Temple. And Laura, you can probably speak to that a little bit more, having been there recently. But this building has not been updated in any way, shape, or form. They've tried to keep it very original to how it was. And so, Laura, having just been there this last summer, tell us about your visit to Kirtland and the significance and the impact that this has for you as a Latter-day Saint living in Ohio.
Okay. So, I mean, for those of you listening, I went this past summer, but I don't even know how many times I've been to Kirtland. I live about 4 hours south of the Kirtland area. So I've gone up dozens of times, I'm sure, since I was a little girl, and watched the historic area grow. And as of the church has accumulated and restored more things. The temple itself, I've been in dozens of times, and it really is beautiful. And it's like walking in an old historic building, one of those living history kind of things, because there's not a lot of modern renovations to it. It is also an old building. I know that of all the times I've toured the temple, I only think I've been up on the third floor a handful of times because of structural concerns. They don't like to take large groups up there, and they don't take them up frequently because they're trying to preserve it. I was reading in one of the articles, it's due to the spacing of the supports. But when you walk in to like the main room, you have the tiered seating for the offices of the people presiding over the various offices of the priesthood, and you have the pews and everything is set up the way it would have been back when the saints were there. And it's such a beautiful building. And the spirit is still so strong there. I've toured it. I've gotten on tours. Sometimes the Community of Christ docent would, there's a little organ piano thing in there, and they'd sit down and we'd sing Spirit of God. She could play it and we'd have that moment. And man, you want like a, just douse yourself in the spirit, sing Spirit of God in the Kirtland Temple. I dare ya. It's gonna evoke everything. And, there for years, they had a YSA conference up at Kirtland, Zion's Camp. And I went a number of times, had wonderful times there, got to have testimony meetings in the Kirtland Temple, such powerful experiences. But the beauty of it is that it has not been, what's the word? Renovated and modernized.
Yeah. Now they haven't gutted it. And, yeah. And yeah, yeah.
But yeah. The one thing that I think is going to be wonderful about this is that, it is going to be free of charge to get in. So as I've gone over the years, there's always a fee to get in that's a preservation fee. And that makes sense because in order to maintain an older building, it costs money. I was, before we started the podcast, John and I were talking, and the house I grew up in was built in the 1840s. So kind of around the time at the Kirtland Temple, a little bit younger. And things happen and it takes a lot to maintain that. And so the Community of Christ needed funds to do that. So you visit, you pay that fee. And there's a little visitor center too next to it where you would start and have an intro video and learn about the history. And then you would go in and take the tour. But so I'm excited to see what happens now. I am anticipating that the church will, one of the first matters of business, sorry, cat on the floor, trying to jump up. She's trying, Tiffany.
Okay.
So I think that they'll assess what needs to be done to preserve this in a way that it will last for generations to come, because it is such a beautiful and powerful building, and so significant in our history. But I don't think they're going to come in and mega modernize it and do anything crazy with it. And I've seen some people speculating that they're going to turn it into a functioning temple like we would anything else. No. They've already come out and said no.
Well, so. And what's interesting on that too is in one of the articles, one part of their contract negotiation was to allow the Community of Christ to have up to 6 meetings a year in the building. So you cannot make that a functioning temple if you are going to allow 6 meetings a year in the building. Plus, I think the building is probably almost too small to really be a functioning temple.
Well, too small. Oh, yeah. And also, and historically speaking, John, you can probably speak to this a lot more eloquently than I will, but it would be historically inappropriate because the Kirtland Temple is so significant in our history because it was a time when the saints were being instructed, and that line upon line concept, this is the beginning of beginning to receive these revelations and things. Church history in Ohio is awesome. I mean, it says go to the Ohio in Doctrine and Covenants 37. We love to quote that here because it's why our state is awesome. Or at least I do. I don't know about other Ohioans. Maybe I'm just a nut. But there's so much revelation that happens in Kirtland. In the Kirtland Temple, we have the restoration of the priesthood. We have Moses, Elias, and Elijah appearing and restoring the sealing power and the beginning of the endowment and all these things. But the Kirtland Temple never functions in the way that Nauvoo and Salt Lake and all these temples today do. It's a house of instruction, and there are ordinances performed, but not the way we think of them today. So for Kirtland to turn into
kind of more like a tabernacle or a stake center.
Yeah, that'd be a good equation. And also it was used as a house of learning. Like it wasn't just used for like Sunday church services. The third floor was used as instructional space throughout the week. And they came to study matters of religion, but also just matters of education. I believe they studied languages to be able to read scripture better. I might be pulling that out of thin air.
Yeah, the School of the Prophets was.
That was in the Whitney store. The School of the Prophets was, well, I mean, they probably met in the Kirtland Temple too. This is where John's going to know more than me because I'm going off of what I vaguely remember from tours. But there, I know there's a specific room in the Whitney store where the School of the Prophets happened because they always take you up on the tour and cram you in there and talk about the men spitting tobacco and Emma getting mad. So, and it's a really pretty red room, like maroon red. But also another really cool thing about the Kirtland Temple is you can still see the remnants of the pulley system. So they would, they have curtains that they would divide the larger meeting room. So there's the first floor meeting room, then there's a second floor meeting room, then the third floor is like little instructional classrooms. And if you want, it's still on Community of Christ's website. There is a virtual 3D tour that you can pay $7 and you can watch a virtual three-dimensional tour online if you really want to. It's pretty.
It'll be free by the end of the month.
It'll be free by the end of the month. I watched like 10 seconds preview of it today just because I was trying to, you know, get my brain back on track. But they would divide the larger meeting rooms into quadrants so that multiple meetings and things could happen simultaneously. You can still see the remnants of that pulley system there. So again, church will try to reinforce the building, but not change it. And they'll keep it so that the Community of Christ can still come in and open, because the Community of Christ opened it to us for meetings. As I said, we had testimony meetings with Zion's Camp, and there were lots of other meetings that would happen there. I want to say that other church groups may have used the Kirtland Temple over the years for meetings too, but I could be not remembering that correct. I feel like I went in once and it was during Lent or Advent, because there was a crucifix with a purple cloth around it on one of the sacrament tables. And I was like, different, not what I was expecting. But I was trying to see, verify I could find anything online to back that up and make sure that memory was real. I'm pretty sure it is. But anyway, so we'll still maintain that open relationship, as we should, because it is a shared heritage and it is exactly a cornerstone of both our religions. And so it's important to keep those doors open.
Yeah. Just to reinforce a couple things you said, the endowment, as most of us understand it today, was not restored until the end of the Nauvoo period. It was another 6 years, and so to you know, gut this temple and put big screens in for the LDS endowment would be totally non-historical. And the church in there, the Utah church in their website, has said that's not in the plans. Yeah. to make it into a regular temple. The Aaronic and Melchizedek priesthood were restored in Pennsylvania. Sorry.
Oh, my
Ohio
bad.
One. But,
I know that brain going fast.
Yeah, no, right? No, I understand. I understand. But I think, you know, obviously Christ's visit and to the Kirtland Temple. I mean, I've heard that the only reason that the Kirtland Temple was built was so that Christ, Elijah, Elias, and Moses could come. That was the reason. And so, you know, that obviously happened. Of course, the Ohioans kicked Joseph out, chasing him with guns. So I don't know how you reconcile that difference today. But.
Well, you know, I mean, I could crack a joke about how, you know, it's that part of Ohio is close to Michigan. So it was clearly the Michiganders who did it. Not the Ohioans, but now all the Michigan fans will hate me for saying that. Go Bucks.
Tiffany, let me just mention a couple of other things that I think if you get on the church's website or on Deseret News, there's like three pages of,
oh yeah,
you know, letter of from Emma to Joseph 1, 2, 3 and all these things. And a lot of massive documents. The originals for 20 or 30 of the Doctrine and Covenants revelations are part of the documents that are coming. I guess I'm just assuming they're coming in Salt Lake. Maybe the church is going to build a big vault in Kirtland or something. I'm not positive about that. Do you know the answer to that?
I read something. I was digging through the internet and kind of reading. I think that everything's going out to Utah
Everything
for now.
It
kind
is.
Of cataloging, and they may be putting some kind of a exhibit up at the Church History Museum, but I mean, more information to come. So, because I mean, there's a ton of documents. Me being a nerd, there's a lot of furniture and time period specific items that are part of this transfer. And for me, I am a huge nerd when it comes to living, like, when you go into a museum and like it's a house and they've set it up like the time period, sure. Got a lot of that out. Do they have a lot of that as you move out west? We do out here.
Okay.
Sorry. I guess that makes sense. But like that kind of stuff is so cool. And like when you walk through the temple doesn't have as much when you go in Kirtland, but when, like, if you go to Nauvoo, to the mansion house and the store and things like that, and then all the houses in Kirtland, there are a ton of those, and that makes it kind of fun. Some of them were handled by the saints. Some of them are just time period specific. Yeah. There's, there's one I love looking for up in Kirtland in the Whitney store. You go into like their little, their family kitchen, and on the mantelpiece, there is this candle, this metal candle holder with a heart, and it's a courting candle. And one of my first trips there, the missionary explained the story to us. It was a little senior missionary lady. She was so sweet. But back in the day, if a man came courting a woman, the dad would put the candle out and he would set the candle to a certain length by using the candlestick. And when the candle burned out, the man had to go. So if he didn't like the guy, he'd put the metal part really high so it only burned for a little bit. But if you really liked the guy, the dad would make the candle longer so that they could have more time. They're courting.
Interesting.
They're so devious back in the mid-1800s.
I know.
But like that part of this list, when I get past the temple and the buildings, go straight there because I'm like, these are cool.
Mornings are better with a warm beverage, even for Latter-day Saints. Meet Postum, the ideal coffee alternative and proud sponsor of This Week in Mormons podcast. Spot it on the coffee aisle at Smith's Grocery or at your local nearby store. Can't locate it? No worries. Order it at Postum.com. Explore delicious recipes to tailor your Postum experience. Start your day off right with Postum.
One more doc. Can I highlight one more document real quick?
I'll get you to highlight one more document.
Okay. And then we need to talk about what didn't get sold. The one of the things that I think is cool is called the Book of Mormon Characters document. So I'm pretty sure it's authentic, but when Joseph Smith sent Martin Harris to talk to the educated guys in New York City, he wrote characters from the Book of Mormon. You know, they look like Egyptian hieroglyphics. And Martin Harris took that piece of paper to talk to, I can't remember the man's name in New York City. And then the guy said, no, this isn't real because it came from, you know, angels don't bring books of metal. And, but I think that's exciting. And then so many church history books and documents and journals. And if I was a BYU history graduate student, I'd be going crazy. I could be just so excited.
Great time for them.
So, can I mention two things that didn't get sold that are significant? The first one is Joseph and Emma's grave. So literally in Nauvoo, the Community of Christ only owns the gravesite. Joseph and Hiram and Emma are buried there, and I think a few of their children. And I'm not exactly sure why the Community of Christ kept that. I mean, I obviously understand the significance, but why did they get rid of everything else? Why did they sell everything else off but keep that gravesite? I think that's significant. And then the question that keeps coming up online is, did the Utah Church get the Independence, Missouri Temple lot? And we did not. That is not owned by the Community of Christ. It's had several names: the Church of Christ, the Church of Christ Hendrickites, and the Church of Christ Temple lot. But I think that is the main, the great. You know, holy grail of anything that we could get is that little piece of property in Independence. And that was not part of this deal. So we don't have that.
It's okay. I mean, I can see why the Community of Christ would have kept the graves. I can understand that. Cause I mean, when you go online and you're reading, if I'm getting ahead on our list, I'm sorry. But when we go and look at the reactions from the Community of Christ, it's just heartbreaking. You can't help but just bleed for them, because this is so emotional for quite a few of them. And I actually, one of the apostles of the Community of Christ, I wrote his name down.
Lachlan. I believe his name is Lachlan. And that's where Lachlan I want to go Mackey? Next. Yeah, yeah. McKay.
That's McKay, where I want to go. I didn't know how to pronounce it.
Next with this is to
I'll let you talk about it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I want to head next with this is, you know, we are so overjoyed at being able to purchase these things that historically mean so much to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But our joy is also another church's grief. Now, granted, we are paying them a lot of dollars for this, and it really was kind of a decision that Laughlin McKay made. He is an apostle with the Church of Christ, Community of Christ, and he is also a direct descendant of Joseph Smith. And so he, in his interviews, has been very emotional about this because this is essentially selling off his family heritage. And so he has talked about how he's been very emotional about this. And he has said, "I care deeply about our past, but I care even more about our future. We no longer have the resources, human or financial, to care for these places the way they deserve to be cared for," is what he said. And he said, you know, "If nothing, I'm a pragmatist. That is what my heritage has taught me, is to be a pragmatist." But just as you said, when you go online and you look at some of the reaction from some of their church members, I think we need to be, you know, obviously happy in our joy, but we have to be cognizant in what this means to them. And so, Laura, I'll let you kind of run with that since you started that kind of discussion.
I went down the rabbit hole on Facebook today on their, I went on their Facebook page and I was reading just because I was curious, because as you were looking at all of our articles, it's immense joy. And it, a lot of people are saying, "We got it back." And you're like, well, you know, they kind of have had it since day one. It's not a "we got it back." It's "we've now acquired it." But when you go on their page, it's a lot of sadness, a lot of hurt, a lot of frustration about the fact that this decision was made without consulting the general membership, and shock was a word that came up a lot. But then also a lot of people who are seeing that bigger picture that McKay, is that how you
McKay,
say it?
Yes.
Sorry, I keep thinking Mackie in my head. But Elder McKay, when he was speaking, he just talked about in this post-pandemic world, the Community of Christ, they cannot go on if they maintain their status quo. They had to make some tough decisions, and they were going to be pragmatic, and they were going to move forward. And his interview that I watched was really touching and emotional. He talked about the great love he had for Kirtland, and basically just spending most of his life there and giving tours and things. And you see that in some of the membership as well.
He lived in one of the houses in Nauvoo that has subsequently been sold to the church. So
I think as an internship or something, he said.
No, he was currently living in it prior to the sale.
Okay.
So yeah, it's, you know, he's also losing his housing, so to speak.
It has to be a lot. I feel like it'd be comparable to if we went and sold the Salt Lake Temple and the surrounding sites there, maybe in Utah. You know, what an impact. Or maybe let's not make it as drastic as Salt Lake, you know, in Free Care, but maybe like, you know, St. George or Logan. I mean, it's all, but like selling those early properties that have such significance to us. I mean, it would be devastating to think of losing those. And I appreciate everyone saying, you know, it's just property, you know, the doctrine is still there. It doesn't make it any easier. I have seen a number of my friends I've been looking at my friends' Facebooks and everyone's reaction, because a lot of my church friends out here, we've been sharing the news articles and we've been interacting. But as we go north in the state, I've seen a number of people talking about, you know, how happy they are, but also, you know, how grateful they are for the Community of Christ, for the work they have done maintaining these properties over the years, and that they were open and willing to making this deal with the church. I did see online today that there was another private investor who wanted to come in and buy everything and made an offer and did not receive it. So I thought that was interesting that there were more than one party invested in trying to acquire all this property. And I saw on the Community of Christ Facebook that there were some members of our church going on and trying to be kind and post, you know, "Thank you, you know, we feel bad for you. Thank you for taking care of it." And some of the reactions were good and not so good. I noticed the Community of Christ has had to disable their comments right now on their posts because people are mad. And we'll just have to watch and see what happens as this goes forward, because man, there are some strong feelings going through right now, and I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Can I present it in maybe just a little bit different way? And I have read all of the Community of Christ comments also on several different forums, and there's obviously an immense sadness, but it is true that there's sort of two not unopposing groups within the Community of Christ, but there is sort of the people that are maybe my age or older that were raised in a Community of Christ that was called the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that you know, so much of their every Sunday message was words of Joseph Smith and words of the Book of Mormon. But as I said earlier, over the last 20 or 30 years, their focus has changed, and they don't quote Joseph Smith nearly as much as they used to. They don't use the Book of Mormon nearly as much as, and so there has been a separation. And so those people who have joined the Community of Christ, especially since 2001 when they changed their name, there's just that different sort of, I don't want to say more traditional Christian focus, but more of I heard the word Protestant, but I don't think that's appropriate word either. But there's these sort of diverging groups within the church, and it's a little bit older and younger, and new members and old members. And I am, because I've read all the social media, my heart goes out for them. But I also worry if this may be worse of a moment than maybe they imagined.
I actually had the same thought, because I mean, you referenced earlier, you know, when they I think you referenced the female ordination of the priesthood, and then and I know I saw like when they opened up policies to LGBTQ members, that there were some people leaving, and we see this in our church whenever there's a policy shift or a change, people. Mm-hmm. They leave, they get upset. Sure. Mm-hmm. And so this is a drastic change. And it really is taking a fundamental part of their identity. And for some people, I saw someone comparing it to 30 pieces of silver. Here you go. Yeah. And I mean, that's a pretty harsh comparison. But if you view it on that level, I'm wondering if we're going to see another big schism, big divide. I mean, we're seeing that in other faiths right now around the world as they're grappling with changes. Sure. And it's completely changing the molecular structure, if you will, of Sure. religion. So I wonder if we're on the verge of that with the Community of Christ.
I'm really hopeful for them that they have, you know, a chunk of cash, and, you know, their mission is more a lot of things in Africa and a lot of, sort of traditional outreach programs. And I hope that this money can help them achieve those things, and that there isn't this old school group of, baby boomers that are upset by it. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to watch.
It will be interesting to watch. And I think that the church is very sensitive to the feelings of the members of the Community of Christ. The church is very, when I say the church, I mean the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is obviously very grateful that they were able to, you know, have this transaction. And what's so interesting is for a number of years, there was a lot of animosity between us and this, you know, for lack of a better term, kind of, I don't know if I want to say splinter, because they didn't really split off from the mainstream LDS church. It just was kind of two different groups trying to figure out what to do after Joseph Smith died. And so there was a lot of animosity for a number of years, probably 100 years or more, between these two groups. And then starting in the 60s and 70s, we started focusing with the then reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we started focusing on the things that we share in common as cousins, so to speak. And what's interesting is when we stopped focusing on our differences with them and we started focusing on the things that we had in common, our relationship with them evolved. into this very working relationship that we've had for a number of years, where just as Laura said, we are able to go in and use the Kirtland Temple, and I'm sure the church paid a fee for it, and that's perfectly fine. But the church, the community of Christ was willing to allow us to come in and use the facility, understanding the sacred and significance that it is to our church. And this is not the first transaction we've had with them. We purchased Hans Mill from them, and I can't remember what the other property was.
Well, there was the manuscript copy
of the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, we did purchase the manuscript copy. And those were two separate transactions in two different time periods. So this is a relationship that has been evolving. But one of the things that I really like about, you know, kind of armchair quarterbacking this relationship that I think can be so just telling for all of the divisiveness that we see today is that when we focus on the things that we share in common, we can work together. When we focus on our differences, all we're going to do is butt heads. And so I really like how the church was kind of, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was kind of in this for the long game and kind of realizing, you know, we need to be friends, not enemies. And let's focus on what we share. And then we were able to get to where we are today. And it very much seems to me like we are going to still continue to focus on what we share with them. We're not excluding them. We are still recognizing this is their heritage too. Now, a lot of the scripts for these historical places are being rewritten. As we know, the buildings closed on the 5th. They will be reopened on the 25th of March. I would guess the church has been working on rewriting these scripts for a while now, that they just didn't decide we're going to rewrite them in 20 days. But from everything that I've read is these scripts will not only look at the historical and the spiritual significance of these buildings, these scripts, when you go on this tour, will also recognize the contribution of the community of Christ. And I think that is so important that we recognize this contribution and we still continue to foster that relationship with them, just for the very reason that you said. This is hard for some members of their church, and I feel for them.
And they're not going away. It's not like this deal is happening because, I mean, the Kirtland Temple is on one side of the street and their church building in the area is on the other side of the street, smack dab staring at each other. Yeah. So it's, they're going to be there. And I am glad that they're going to incorporate and keep it in there, because if we didn't, that's the opposite of what we need to be doing in general in society. We need to embrace everything. So I think this is good. They probably have been working for a while, because I believe the discussion started in 2021. Is that what I read?
Yes, June of 2021. So I'm almost sure 3 years. Yeah, exactly.
The story is that it was about to get leaked. This gentleman that you mentioned, I can't remember his name, who had offered $100 million. Something like that.
I couldn't pronounce it, but.
He apparently had a pretty reasonable offer of $100 million. He is from the Strangite group.
Oh.
So he's still one of the – there still is some members from that group. And so he's a big collector, and he offered $100 million to buy it. And then he got word that I used the word brigamite to one of my friends, my LDS friends today, and they were like so offended that I used the word brigamite. But that's – in church history, that's a fairly common way to refer to the Utah group. But when he was going to leak it, and so the church released a press statement in a big hurry before he could do it, I guess is the story.
I saw he dropped a video. I was trying to figure out if he was mainstream a brigamite. I have never heard that, but I believe you. You know more about history than I do.
Yeah,
kind of cool. I'm a brigamite.
He's from the Strangite, from the, you know, an island in Lake Michigan.
So, I think when you look at the path of the church and the threads that pop off, and maybe it's being out here and seeing the path of how it changes. Maybe it's growing up with a mother who was really into church history and hearing her listen. I've never viewed these offshoot groups negatively. It's all just a part of, after Joseph was martyred, look, the church was in chaos. There was a lot going on. No one knew what to do. We're still a new church.
Yeah.
All these issues, like, it just, there was a lot going on. And Emma, after all she'd been through, that was just.
Yeah, I think Tiffany got a different version of that story. You know, Brigham really didn't like Emma. And so as a kid, I heard really negative things about Emma Smith, that she was kind of the bad guy in the story. And thankfully, that has been corrected in Utah. So that's good.
No, I think, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's, an Ohio thing. Maybe my mom taught seminary for 11 years and talked a lot of church history. And I just grew up always having a lot of sympathy for Emma. And you see pictures of her later in life. And she just looks broken. And you just think of everything she went through. And that was just maybe one thing too many. So it just, no harshness here, because it was a lot going on. But I'm glad to see these properties now acquired by the church, and that we'll be able to continue to preserve them and preserve them safely in a way that people can enjoy for years to come. There's a special spirit about visiting any of the church history sites, whether it's Carthage Jail, whether it's Nauvoo, Palmyra, there's power there. And that's worth preserving and worth experiencing. So Tiffany, you got to come out to Ohio, got to visit.
Come to Ohio. Well, my husband and I have talked for the last couple of years that we want to do an RV trip and drive our RV across country and hit all of the church history sites. We've just been trying to coordinate that with our schedules, and so far not having much luck. So,
it's fun. I've done most of them. I've missed a few. But
I think on that note, we are almost at an hour here. We've had a great discussion on this topic. We had a few other stories. Really, they're very kind of lightweight stories. So I think we're just going to skip those for now, because we've had such a thoroughly engaging discussion on the breaking huge news this week that I'm not gonna mar it with these other stories. So we'll skip those for now, and maybe the hosts for next week can pick up these stories if they want. So I always do Mormons Behaving Badly. Of course, this week, guess what? The Mormons were all too enthralled with the purchase that the church made that nobody behaved badly this week. I have no Mormon behaving badly this week. So on that note, we will conclude the show by doing our favorite things. John, let's start with you and let you tell our listeners what your favorite thing is.
All right. So my wife and I love the city of Chicago. And we've been there several times for different things. And in Old Town Chicago, as you're walking through the shops and the neighborhoods and stuff, there's a spice store that is called it's called The Spice House. But it reminds me like of an old fashioned pharmacy with big jars, and I could just imagine that scene from It's a Wonderful Life with the pharmacist and little Jimmy Stewart. But so they sell amazing spices. Okay. And you probably can't see, but it's called The Spice House. And I am the cook in the family, and I love amazing spices. And so I buy all my spices there, whether I'm in town in Chicago or if I buy them online. But like, I have summer garden herb blend, and I have I have one called Ukrainian Village with shallots and garlic, and I can't read it enough to give you the rest, and olive oil seasoning. You add it to your olive oil before you dip bread in it. And
oh, that sounds delicious. Called
Mediterranean Greek Town.
So and you're so, coming over and cooking dinner when?
Yes, soon, very soon. Next time I'm in Ohio, we'll meet up, but the Chicago spice store, it is called The Spice House online, and you pay a little bit more for your spices than you do at the local grocery store. Definitely worth it if you like good cooking. Spice House.
Okay, thank you. There you go. Laura, what do you want to share tonight?
Okay, so I am sharing backstory before I share. So I developed a dairy allergy a couple of years ago as an adult, which is the worst kind of way to develop a dairy allergy, because I remember what cheese tasted like.
Oh,
and now I can't have it. It is the worst.
That's tough.
Fake cheese is not worth it. But this time of year, with sweets and everything, you get the craving. It's really hard to find stuff that's dairy-free. But Girl Scout cookies this year, there are quite a few flavors that are actually vegan. So I'm able to have them because there's no dairy products. So I have the wrapper of what I had for dinner tonight because it was that kind of a week. So I have the peanut butter patties left over. Oh, and I have a few left. I didn't eat them all. I'm not a savage, okay? But I am loving on Girl Scout season. And as a teacher, I have multiple Girl Scouts. And when I started teaching, my rule was typically fundraisers, the first kid that asks me, I'll buy one thing. But with Girl Scout cookies, I was like, I'll buy two boxes from every Girl Scout that asks me.
Well, you can always put them in the freezer and then, you know, dole them out throughout the year.
Thin mints are so good frozen. So anyway, there's about four or five flavors that are vegan and I am so happy. So that is my favorite thing.
Nice job.
All right. Well, my favorite thing is an Easter related candy. I was talking to my daughter this week who is in college and she said, Mom, have you seen these? It is the Reese's eggs. But rather than the traditional egg that you unwrap, they are mini eggs. So there is no unwrapping necessary. You just open the package and put them in your mouth. Exactly. So
that's my favorite candy back in the day.
Here is my review on the Reese's mini eggs. Because, of course, I have a package of the regular eggs, too, because I think there is nothing more divine than a Reese's egg. Sorry, Laura.
Okay.
Here's what I like about the Reese's egg is the peanut butter to chocolate ratio is much higher than with your typical Reese's peanut butter cup. And that is why I prefer the Reese's egg or the Christmas tree or, you know, whatever their holiday thing is. With these little mini eggs, the peanut butter to chocolate ratio is not nearly as high as the big eggs. They kind of taste a little bit more like the Reese's like mini cups if you've ever tried the mini cups or used them for baking. So they're not quite as good as the regular egg, but you don't have to unwrap them. And it is very deceptive because you can eat way more of these without realizing how many you're eating versus if I've unwrapped three of these, I know how many calories I've just consumed. A handful of these, two or three handfuls of these, and I have no clue. Anyway, so that is my favorite thing tonight.
I think that's a good physics experiment for my class this week is to do a chocolate to peanut butter ratio experiment. You know, we could weigh it to the nearest gram and stuff. It would be very highly scientific.
Yeah. Oh, I think your kids would love that.
I would come to that class. I can't think of a way to tie Reese's into a choir easily off the top of my head. I'll work on it.
I'll work on it. Laura and John, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I have thoroughly enjoyed our discussion. Both of you had just incredible things to add on this big news week for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So I appreciate your thoughts and your comments and being willing kind of at the last minute in the last two or three days to say, yeah, I'll get on a podcast with you on Friday night. So I'm very grateful for that. TWIM Nation, as always, you can find us on all the social media platforms. You can find us on X, TWIM Sisters Instagram, which I will update with our favorite things. And John, who you heard from tonight, is now doing a lot of work on our Facebook page and getting great stories out there on Facebook. So be sure and follow us on Facebook because we have all these stories and John will post questions on Facebook and get a good discussion going, which we really appreciate. If you have any comments, you can reach out at contact at thisweekinmormons.com. And we will read through all of your comments, respond to those that need responding. And we just appreciate you listening. Thank you.